Chapter 1. Martin Dixon was secretly in love with Jack's hammer. Deeply, profoundly in love, despite the fact that they had never met, that Jack's hammer was not his real name, and that Martin was double the boy's age. Theirs was a 21st century relationship, fully digital. The entertainment center loomed against one wall in Martin's TV room / office. After closing the mini blinds and the drapes, setting the TV to a non-neighbor offending volume, and placing a tube of Vaseline, a box of Kleenex, and the remote on the pull-out sofa that no one ever pulled out, he was finally ready to open the secret compartment in the bottom shelf of his entertainment center. In the compartment were four Jack's Hammer DVDs, A Brief History of Gangbangs, Howard's End, in which Jack starred as Howard, Ifs and Buts, and the football-themed End Zone. Of course, all of this was now available on computer, and Martin had digital copies of everything as backup. It's just that there were times when he liked to keep his masturbatory routine old school. After deliberating, Martin chose Ifs and Buts because it co-starred Jax's real-life boyfriend, Ryder King. It also contained Martin's all-time favorite porno moment in Chapter 16. Spread-eagled on a brown leather sofa, Jax looked up dreamily at Ryder. About to orgasm, he mouthed the words, "I love you." Or maybe it was, "I love your dick." Martin wasn't entirely sure. But he leaned toward, "I love you," because a genuine smile spread across Ryder's face. And Martin didn't think Ryder would be too impressed by someone loving his dick. He was a porno star, after all. Martin had seen the moment 60 times, but it seemed completely real each time. The model slipped out of the performance of sex and into the reality of sex, and the idea that it was real fascinated Martin. Slipping the DVD into the player and pulling his pants down to his ankles, he waited impatiently through the warnings and the threats of prosecution. When he got to the main menu, he started the movie and began skipping through. The moment happened at 1 hour, 36 minutes, and 14 seconds. But he liked to start about 10 minutes earlier, just at the point where Jack's hammer, the landline, rang. Martin debated whether or not to answer. He did have an anticipatory hard-on and a dollop of Vaseline spread all over his left hand. What he didn't have was caller ID. He had no idea who was calling, and it might be important. Even though no one called that line anymore, it might be an emergency. Though he couldn't think what kind. Martin was certain he had eliminated all the drama from his life, which really should have removed emergencies with it. He figured it was nothing, but he wouldn't know for sure if he didn't answer, and the possibility that it was more than nothing would haunt him like a bad debt. He really did need to sign up for caller ID. "Hello? Martin, why aren't you answering your cell?" It was Ricky. Though he cared deeply about his best friend, his hard-on immediately fled. "I don't know. It's somewhere around here. I don't think it rang." It might have rung, but Martin had been busy. "What are you doing?" Ricky asked. "Nothing," Martin lied. "Great. I'm at Merrick's. You should pop over for a drink." Ricky worked as first assistant to film producer and wunderkind Winnie Collier. Collier's career started when she coerced a writer into a free option on a script about two 40-year-old cops going undercover as skateboarders, and then sold it for seven figures. The film never got made, but that was blamed on the writer. Winnie got a production deal, an office, and two assistants to torture. Ricky spent a great deal of time at Merrick's. "I can't pop over. I'm 34 miles away,"